Now, on to our roundtable. From NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., we've got Joe Davidson, an editor at The Washington Post, along with Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. And from member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island, Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and professor of economics at Brown University. Thanks for joining us. And so we just heard from James Clyburn. He's got a nice new job. Mary, what do we think about this? I mean, is the CBC gonna, you know, get in and really be able to rumble in the new Democratic-led Congress?
Well, I was over there the other night talking to John Conyers and Charlie Rangel and some of the rest of the guys, and I've known Jim Clyburn for years before he was in politics up here. And I think that, yes, they will be able to make an impact, Rangel especially, on Ways and Means, which is probably the most powerful committee in the House. And he knows everybody and everything and where everybody is buried and how to unbury it. Jim Clyburn is respected by, he plays golf with the Blue Dogs and he knows all these people. And so I think that whatever little squabbles they had about the leadership really is not important in terms of going forward. So at least we've got voices at the table when powerful decisions are made. And I think it will have some impact.
Joe, I wouldn't necessarily call what happened with Congresswoman Pelosi and Murtha and Hoyer a squabble, but at the same time, African Americans are poised to take all sorts of positions. You've got John Conyers for potentially for judiciary, Alcee Hastings, intelligence, Juanita Melender McDonald, House Administration, Charlie Rangel, Ways and Means, Benny Thompson, Homeland Security. I don't believe all of these have been decided yet, but, you know, it seems like kind of an influx of new black power. How do you parse that out?
Well, I think it's a result, of seniority, and obviously the Democrats finally taking power. John Conyers has been in the Congress, I think, longer than every member except one. And obviously, as Mary mentioned, Charlie Rangel is poised to become chairman of Ways and Means. So when you stay there a long enough period of time and when your party takes power, then you as an individual and then speaking in a larger sense, the Congressional Black Caucus has more power. I think, though, that there's still another shoe to fall in this kind of continuing drama, and that involves Alcee Hastings, because the incoming speaker, Nancy Pelosi, has indicated to the caucus that he will become the next head of the Intelligence Committee. However, he is not the most senior member among the Democrats. That falls to the current ranking member Jane Harman, but she apparently is on the outs with Nancy Pelosi, and so we still have to see if Nancy Pelosi will go with Alcee Hastings or with Jane Hartman, who is the ranking member.
Well, Joe, I mean, do you think that Congresswoman Pelosi has been effectively kind of reprimanded with this last?
Well, I think she certainly has been. Murtha lost decisively. I think that she probably realizes that she made a big mistake promoting him so aggressively, and all reports indicate that her promotion of him was very aggressive, not just a simple letter, which she did write about a week ago. And she, frankly, was dealt a serious political blow. I do think that she can recover from it because this is still very early. I started to say in her tenure. She actually hasn't taken office yet. So I think she can recover from it, but she definitely has some amends to make.
Glenn, when we look at how the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, is progressing in the new landscape of Congress, what really will be the impact on African Americans and on Americans in general? What can we hope for or expect will be the ramifications of having a lot of black folks in leadership positions?
Well, you know, I'm glad that they're going to be black chairmen of important congressional committees, but I think the fact that these are progressive politicians who have a more expansive vision about the role that government can play in solving problems in people's lives is much more important than is the fact that they're black. In fact, I caution here that, you know, if we call it black power, we're not going to have that power for very long. I would prefer to focus on the fact that the voices that we're going to be hearing discussing taxes, entitlement reform, health care issues, minimum wage legislation, educational reform, No Child Left Behind is up for reauthorization. Those voices coming out of the Congress are now going to be substantive, progressive voices who are going to be articulating a different, less pinched and narrow vision about the role of government than what we've been hearing from the White House and the Republican Congress. And that is the thing to me, that some of those faces are going to be black is great. Much more important, however, that they're progressive.
But, Farai, if I may say, that that's not really, I mean, it's important that some of these people are progressive, but there's going to really be a fight because the message that the Democratic Party wants to project, the so-called moderates, people like DLC or Rahm Emanuel, who's now sitting in the catbird seat because of all the work that he did, the Blue Dog, some of the new people that have been up there, people like Charlie Rangel, who does have progressive views himself, but who's also an inside player and who knows the nuts and bolts of dealing on both sides of the aisle and in the business community and everywhere else, they're going to have a rough row to hoe trying to frame a message that will get the support of all these parts of the caucus. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that the Pelosi finds herself in another no-win situation, like the Murtha thing. If she goes with Alcee Hastings, it's going to be all the stuff about corruption and do you really believe in ethical change and look what happened before. And if she doesn't go with him, the Black Caucus is going to be upset. So she's somewhere now painfully trying to figure out after having been, as somebody put it, spanked. What does she do next about this other thing? So the Democrats, as usual, are all off in all different directions. And I think the media, too, story now is look at the conflict within the Democratic Party. Somebody's got to manage that somehow, too. So basically, we're not out of the woods yet. And we're not even, actually, we're just entering the woods. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
All right, blame the media. We don't create we don't create the conflict. We just publicize it. Just publicize it. We love it. That's our business. Right. But, Joe, I mean, you know, you're at the Washington Post. It's got to be time. You know, you guys got to be like tap dancing around the offices. You got a lot to report on.
Well, that's true, and I think the Democrats are giving a lot of fodder to reporters now. I mean, I think it's almost incredible that they've gotten off on this, this step right after such an enormous victory. That here a week later, the publicity is so much in the other direction about division, about the leader of the Democrats in the House getting spanked, as Mary said. I think for the Democrats, it really puts them off on the wrong foot, and we really need to regroup between now and when the new Congress starts in January.
All right. Well, I want to move along to a couple of other topics. Some tough language, the N-word and the word coon. Now, the term coon has historically been offensive, but Howard University students are kind of using it as this more gentle put down, perhaps. Everyday conversation, they're saying things like that person's coonin' if you're doing the chicken noodle soup dance. Now, I didn't even know about the chicken noodle soup dance until recently. I'm 37, and I guess
wow.
that's beyond me. So, whatever. But anyway, we spoke to the editor of Howard's newspaper, The Hilltop, Aisha Roscoe, and she said a lot of students think that it's a good way to, you know, kind of use something like the N-word that's not the N-word.
They may not know the history of the word. I think that's probably part of the problem, that they don't know the history of the word, and they just believe that that's, you know, the way there are different characters or different stereotypes about black people. You have the mammy, you have a coon. I think they're using it in that, they believe they're using it in that sense, that this is just another stereotype.
Okay, Professor Barry, can you use coon or coonin in a way that is not as offensive as the N-word?
No, I think that they're both actually offensive, and they both reflect the ignorance, lack of knowledge, lack of sensitivity about being serious about issues. Part of it reflects being young and being a student and playing around with stuff and not knowing what you're playing around with. And there are people still alive, including some of those who didn't vote for Harold Ford after that ad that came on the air, who still think, down in my home state of Tennessee, of us as coons, the old Negroes, who are worthless and for nothing and, you know, sexually challenged and everything else. So I think that given the seriousness of the problems that we face as a people, five more states getting ready to vote on affirmative action referendum, they're gearing up to do that after the Michigan thing, and other issues that go on, that somebody needs to educate the students better about what they're doing. If they still choose to do it, then, you know, they would say that they're having fun. I talked to some about it, and they said, well, because Howard's my alma mater, and they said, we're just having fun. You know, people don't want to stop us from having fun. You know, that's old school. And that we can make words mean whatever we think the words should mean, and we're just playing. So pretty soon they may be calling each other, the females may be calling each other mammy, as far as I know.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, I mean, you know, there is a long history of black folks having inside jokes and then getting offended when white folks pick up those jokes. And so how can we have a situation where, you know, there's an inside culture and then there's an outside culture? Can you have something like Coonan mean one thing in the black community and then say, oh, it's not going to spill over? Because this all came about because there was an AP article. So it's getting out.
Yeah, I mean, of course you can have the same word having different meanings inside and out. It's not going to be a surprise that if a people are, you know, in a stigmatized, stereotyped kind of position within a society, that they might take those very instruments of their own stigmatization and then turn them into some kind of playful and ironical critique back at the society itself. I'm not trying to impute any high-level intellectuality to these Howard students that we're talking about, but I'm just saying the fact that black people will make use of the same sort of cultural apparatus, which is also an instrument of their oppression or stigmatization, isn't paradoxical and it isn't a surprise. But I do want to say one thing. There are real coon-making, if you'll allow me, institutions in our society right now. I'm talking about prisons that are very black, or about media and entertainment dynamic that projects images about black people in a particular way, or about ghettos in the hearts of our great cities and so forth. These are our real, today, coon-making institutions. We don't have minstrel shows anymore. There aren't any sambos and mammies running around anymore. But there are racially stigmatizing institutions that are very powerful. And rather than critiquing the words of Howard students, I would, you know, rather that we were critiquing the institutions of American society that are making the modern 21st century coons.
Whoa. You know, if I might pick up on that, some of those
Joe, we have 30 seconds.
Okay, one difference between the institutions of yesterday and the institutions of today, I think, is that many of the institutions of today are created or controlled, at least, by black people, even if they aren't owned by black people. And I'm talking about the hip-hop videos, talking about the kinds of programming you see on BET, for example. This is black people doing this to black people, and often being purchased by white people, as opposed to years ago, when it was really those institutions were more or less imposed on the black community from without.
Denigrating yourself, that's very deep.
That's
wow.
Right.
You know, this could be a whole other
perhaps.
Conversation, but we're going to have to leave it right here.
Whole other.
Joe Davidson, editor at the Washington Post, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, Glenn Lowry of Brown University, thank you all so much.
Thanks for it.